bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds Family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
At the Races with Steve Wick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back, and you know, I fully intend to play more, you know, more of the song for Joe Clancy's visit, because he and his wife were in Philly yesterday, and we'll talk about the fightins. But I'm going to slip this in because I know that my reference, I think, was lost on Pat. For those of you who have ever graduated from kindergarten or anything, Joe Clancy, can you name this tune?
You're really good at putting people on the spot.
it's not the normal. It's not like I asked you something that everybody's going to expect you to, you know, to answer, like, you know, Andiamu's performance in the timber race.
Oh my God, that's great.
All right. Well, I know that Leslie, who's listening, she knows. You know, years ago, Andy Serling taught me. He said, "Never pull up from a gag or a line or something that, you know, you think not everybody a reference everybody will get." Well, when I mentioned the horse, the John Service horse, Pachelbel, running tomorrow in the McDermott, who's a late runner, so might be shot out of a cannon. That's Pachelbel, cannon in D major, of course, and so. I hate having to explain the jokes, but you know, they write
it happens sometimes. We'll know them next time.
Exactly. They write themselves these lines. Joe, let's dive right into the important stuff. The Philadelphia. You can't make up what's going to happen here the next 10 days, because of course the two off days for the two off days for the World Series, for the Phils and the Stros, the Eagles on Sunday, and then on Thursday, the Eagles are in Houston. You couldn't make this stuff up. It's stranger than fiction.
Yeah, no, you couldn't make up any of it. They were, you know, in terms of Philly fandom, probably going back my whole life. But if you just said this team back in April would be in the World Series, you know, you'd have gotten laughed out of the room. So it's all about as improbable as you could come up with, I think.
Well, and I, you know, I cannot, you know, unlike the kinship that I've got with you guys when it comes to the Birds, because I am, in fact, you know, a lifelong sick lunatic when it comes to the Eagles. I can't say the same about the Phils. However, having Bryce Harper the last several years on my fantasy team and having drafted Real Muto this year, I took an interest in the Phillies all season, and I even picked up Falter, the kid, the young pitcher who got kind of roughed up in Game 4, but I had picked up Falter, and he had been spectacular. So I had three Phillies on my team, the Montreal Royals. I finished fourth this year. I wish we could use the postseason in the standings. I'd have won, but this has been so infectious, Joe. I mean, anybody that watches baseball with any interest has to be completely tickled and just wide-eyed at what they did here in these three series.
Yeah, and it's a little, to draw a loose parallel to what we really do, it's a little like racing. I mean, you know, a winner can come from anywhere. A good horse can come from anywhere. And I think that's sort of a good baseball team came out of that collection of, you know, what some people would have considered spare parts at various times, and then they fire the manager and promote a guy, make him an interim manager who's never been a manager anywhere, and, you know, they turn the whole thing around, and, you know, it really has captured the, I mean, I live in Maryland, I grew up in Delaware, and in Pennsylvania, and I've sort of, you know, through osmosis been just exposed to this forever. I don't live in Philadelphia, so I'm not quite as connected as a lot of people, but, you know, I do remember going to Veterans Stadium when the seats were 50 cents a piece in the 700 level to watch Phillies games, you know, as a kid, you know, so, and they're the first franchise to lose 10,000 games or something like that, so they've paid their dues, and to see it kind of come along like this, and just, they keep finding hits, and they're finding ways to win, and get really good pitching out of those two studs, and then sort of cobble the rest of it together, you know, and here they are, and, you know, they've lost two games the whole postseason.
Well, the other part of this, too, that has to be layered on is the soccer team, the union that has a serious following in the city, for those that are soccer aficionados. The Flyers are off to a shocking start. One of the funny things that I keep seeing is that in perfect Philadelphia fan tradition, everyone is quite comfortable with the Sixers being sacrificed at the altar for all of this to happen. The Eagles, the Union, the Flyers, and the Phils, they're saying it's okay that the Sixers are just a mess to start the season. So nobody's complaining about that. But people can't realize, unless you're serious about Philadelphia sports, you cannot realize how heady this is for everything that's happening, Joe, for the Eagles to be one of the two or three best teams in the NFL and undefeated and having this mojo, and then having this team on the baseball side, which is just as fun and raucous and engaging. I don't think anybody's ever seen fans in a building make as much noise for as long as, certainly during the Braves series. I think they were a little bit more even, although they were still plenty loud. But this is as heady a scenario. I mean, and I haven't even kept tabs on what Villanova's doing and Temple are doing on the football field.
No, me neither. But you're right about the Sixers. If the Sixers have to lose, if they have to go 0 for the month, I think we'll be fine with it.
Right? It's too funny. Wow.
We were lucky enough to kind of be in, we were in the city last night. My wife was there for a work conference, like a 4-day work conference. And I drove down up yesterday, and we went for a run along Kelly Drive, along the Schuylkill, while listening to the game. Bryce Harper hit the home run while we were with a great view of City Hall and the whole street. Just random people walking on the street and the police officers getting ready for their night to start. We're all watching on their phones, and, you know, it was kind of a strange collective way to experience the game. And then we watched the last couple outs in a hotel bar where, you know, you're high-fiving everybody from the kitchen staff to, you know, corporate executives, anybody. It was really fun.
Did you walk out on Broad Street at all?
We had dinner reservations at Rittenhouse Square, which you could probably guess is a pretty quiet in terms of pole climbing area. and then walking back, we did get to catch a few glimpses of some celebrations for sure. And again, we were up, you know, around City Hall in that area and not, you know, closer to the stadiums, but there was still plenty of celebrating going on.
Well, the pretty much, you know, pretty much from City Hall down to, you know, Locust or further even down was just thronged. And that
yeah,
the video that I put up from crossing Broad of the drum line, it's a minute long. Anybody that watched the parade for the Eagles as well, it's there's just no place. That was one of the great disappointments, honestly, of my entire life, that we could not, Tina and I could not go down for the Eagles parade because I had to fly to Vegas that day for the NHC, and that was a huge disappointment because we would have absolutely gone down for the parade. You know, it's
such a collective joy or a collective something. I mean, yesterday wasn't even, you know, they haven't won the World Series, and there was nothing planned. It was just sort of this spontaneous, you know, this happened, and it was a terrible rainy night, and it was not a nice night. And it was just, you know, again, where we were was pretty quiet by comparison, but it was still just a very infectious kind of, cool time to be out and watching all that, and just sort of to watch the people's reactions and to feel it all. It was really special.
Well, you know, then we also, you know, we've also gotten very much into the song. You and the wife into the song.
I'm so square. I never heard of the song until the Phillies started announcing it, so I didn't know. I never heard of the song until it became the Phillies song. So I guess, but
well,
I don't know what that says, but yes, we're into the song.
Well, the song, as I explained this morning, this Callum Scott, our grandson, is named Callum, and
there you go.
They got the name Callum from Callum Scott. So,
wow.
I mean, I happened to know about the song, and then when it started to show up in the locker room, I was like, you got to be kidding. Giving it my all. It's great. It's just unbelievable. Get on board,
no,
folks.
It's just completely improbable, right? So, you know,
yes.
they and they have a mix of all kinds of different people, obviously, in that locker room.
Right.
They get a post-game playlist going, that's on it, and now it's become something they play at the stadium and 45,000 people are singing it.
Yeah. It's just, that's the beauty. You know, much the same way. And I suppose, you know, listen, a lot of teams have had songs, you know, that 79 Pirates with Family, and I mean, the best, of course, is, you know, the Eagles, with McFadden and Whitehead, Ain't No Stopping Us Now. There's
the
so much.
Play that take on me song and the whole crowd thing. I mean, yeah, it's the collective whatever of sports that people get wrapped up in, you know, and we don't have enough in today's world. We probably don't have enough collective thoughts like that. So I think it's a good thing.
Can we do this? I wonder if we could do this for, I guess the closest we have for racing is the songs for the Triple Crown. Is Maryland My Maryland? And you know, well, and well, Streets of New York for the longest time, now they've changed it to which I don't approve of. But and of course, well, then you got the problematic, Kentucky home.
Churchill. You know, and we might have to upgrade all these things. Maybe we need new music.
This is a project. This sounds like a project for the interns of the Saratoga Special.
Or the guy, and now his name escapes me, and somebody will come up. One of your listeners will remember it, but the person who chooses the music to kind of roll in and out of races and the simulcast hits at Saratoga and the Naira track has a wonderful sense of timing. And if you listen, it's very subtle little tributes to horses and people and things that are going on. But you got to listen. But it's there. So we're gonna recruit that guy. Andy will put us in touch.
Well, not bad. I find some of those choices. It's funny because music has historically been a big part of our show. We can't play as much as we used to because of, you know, there's the, when you go to
rules.
Load the pod. Yeah, you go to load the podcast. Even though, you know, obviously SiriusXM has, you know, has blanket rights to play everything. When you then load the podcast, the system will kick out and then it blocks it, and so it's become problematic to, you know, play too much music the way we used to, which we loved. And it bugs me, like, we can't play as much as we used to. But this is a concept to get everybody. Well, you know, what about the singing at Royal Ascot, right? After the races, they have that session where everybody sings.
Sweet Caroline, of all things, you know. So
there you go.
Explain that.
Well, that's become. I guess the Red Sox are responsible for that. Yeah. I don't know that one. That one. I don't want to get in trouble with Red Sox fans. I don't mind getting in trouble with Astro fans. But here's my, you know, we got plenty of time between now and Friday to implore everybody to get on the right side of this.
Exactly. Because there are Astro fans. Come on.
There are. We will allow Nick Tamaro because he grew up there.
All right.
We'll allow Nick. But of course, anybody that was watching the Yankee game last night against the Astros, you know what's at stake here. This is a good versus evil scenario, and with the fightins being the fightin' Phils being the forces of good, and the Houston Ted Cruz's being the forces of evil. So it's very clear where this comes down, folks. Choose wisely. Choose wisely, or you'll end up like the Nazi in the cave in Indiana Jones. I'd like to get all the Nazis in a cave, and boy, there's more now than there were 75 years ago, it seems. And suddenly they're all on this side of the Atlantic.
Yeah.
Hey now,
what a world.
Yeah. Joe, let's talk. We got so many things to do. Maryland Million had a terrific preview of it with Callie Francoise, who she did so well that she took off for a Florida beach vacation. I asked. I said, "You coming back Monday?" No, I'm in Florida. Okay. But
I'm sitting here going through notes trying to figure out what I need story-wise for Mid-Atlantic Thoroughbred, you know, after spending all day there. So,
well, it was, I tell you, it was a very fun card. And, yes, there were plenty of formful results, but, you got to put them in the gate. That's part of what you deal with.
Yeah, for sure. No, and I mean, from my side, I'm there covering it. You're just sort of watching various stories unfold, and I was talking to Cricket Goodall afterwards, and you know, it had a little bit of everything. You know, there was no Blofeld stallion wise won both juvenile races, but
yep.
There was no real dominant stallion. There were no big dominant, trainers or owners or breeders. It spread all around. There was You know, little guys, bigger guys. I thought it was a great day of racing. Beautiful, beautiful day at Laurel Park, and kind of a really, you know, vibrant, big crowd for today.
You had a big crowd. Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, I mean, it was fantastic. That I loved that when we're there.
Tell me about in terms of a performance that not necessarily, you know, unexpected. Johnny Z from Albany was 4-1, was actually the fourth choice, paying 10-20. But there were four horses between 5-2 and 4-1. Johnny Z from Albany, wire to wire, widening as they approached the wire. This one, a homebred for Charlie Reed, and one of the Blofelds is already gelded, and Dale Capuano, 84 buyer. This is a serious 2-year-old.
Wow, yeah, for sure. I was really impressed with him, and you know, again, pedigree wise, by Blofeld, who's obviously done very well with small numbers in terms of the stallion, and then his damn monster Sleeping One. She won two Maryland Million races. For Chip Reed, you know, which again just keeps extending this kind of generational thing, and again, that's a great example of Maryland racing when you just see these connections like that keep kind of coming around, you know. And then I did figure out who Johnny Z from Albany was. So that's, you know, we got all kinds of storylines as usual.
And who is he? Do you have to read Mid-Atlantic Thoroughbred?
Hopefully I can get a little more detail, but Chip's friend, very good friend and partner, Mike, in a lot of horses, not necessarily in this one, is Mike Zanella, and they make a big trip to Saratoga every summer for a week at least, maybe two, but I always see them there. And Johnny Zanella, Mike's, now he's going to throw me for a loop, brother, I think, or cousin, would pick him up at the airport and have food and treat them to some upstate New York hospitality. So, and they named the horse after him. And he passed away last year. Again, good news is I write for a monthly magazine, so I can find out all this stuff and piece it all together. So December is Mid-Atlantic Thoroughbred. We'll have the whole story, but that's the story. I got lots of, isn't this a New York bred? And I'm like, no, he's a Maryland bred.
It's just the name. It's just the name. It doesn't matter where they're at. Yeah. Where the horse actually is from.
But serious, the runner-up, like you said, kind of just threw off, right?
Yeah,
that was.
Yeah,
you know,
he did.
And I don't necessarily think the Blofeld, have to stick to sprinting. So, kind of an exciting two.
Well, and we should mention too the runner-up who ran very well, and they weren't rooting for or against anybody, but. Justin Horowitz's Heldish, and it's the J-Ho, and congratulations to Justin, who's now multiple stakes placed. That was second in the Hickory Tree at Colonial, and now adds this Maryland nursery as well. And we have to get J-Ho to visit. How about the, you know, one story I saw that there was one very active Twitter over the weekend, Joe. I don't know if you caught everything, taking shots at anybody that he could find, you can say whatever. Jamie Ness brings attention to himself, obviously, but this was still a very clever maneuver to take that $50,000 claim. Our Nation on Parade, knowing full well that he was going to be eligible for this spot. That was a savvy move.
Yeah, and he said he had to win a five-way shake with at least three other Maryland trainers trying to do the same thing. So it's not like it was a complete original idea.
We're the only ones, yeah.
So it turned out to be a very savvy move. And the best part about that horse, the best part about that story to me was his breeder, Jay Williamson, who's a longtime Maryland racing guy, works for the racing commission now in the test barn, and who everybody knows, Jay Bird, he bred the horse and ran him, I think, twice with Bernie Houghton, and then they sold him to Reeves Thoroughbred Racing. And to have him, he won the Maryland Million Juvenile for Bernie and Jay. And to have him come all the way back and then win the Classic however many years later, you know, and Jay was there, and the moment was not lost on him. He was very emotional in the winner's circle, and you could tell it meant a lot for, again, a Maryland racing lifer kind of thing to breed a Maryland Million Classic winner. You can see what it means to people.
Well, and you know, it's funny because here's a horse that, and it would be interesting to get Amos on, and they, the Reeves and Amos dropped him in after some time off as a 3-year-old in 21, dropped him in for 40 and was plucked at that time by Juan Cano. And then Cano ran through the winter months at Oaklawn and Fairgrounds and then into the spring at Keeneland, ultimately dropping below the claim level at 32. And at that point, Chris Hartman jumped on him, won a race, then a second level allowance, 94 buyer, then dangled him for 50. So he's one of these horses that, you know, is right at the condition level, and it's a pretty fascinating story. He's only 5, and he's now won 8 times in 25 starts. So he's been a consistent winner. It's not like this horse has been refashioned. It's just that he's one of these tweeners. He's not going to be a graded stake horse, although, frankly, he's now run 3 straight 90-plus buyers, a 94, a 91, and a 98. I mean, this is a mile and an eighth. This is a very useful horse, and I thought it was one of the better stories, despite somebody trying to make it into a negative.
Yeah, and again, you look at his, I mean, he was purchased out of 2 starts in Maryland to then go on to, you know, go on to the 3-year-old trail. He was 3rd in the Hutchinson. I mean, he was on his way, you know, and that part didn't pan out. But then, I mean, he didn't run again. He ran in Laurel in the Maryland Million of 2019 and didn't run in Maryland again, despite being a Maryland bred, until the other day. And, you know, I think Jamie would have all the confidence in the world to take him, or any trainer at this point, to take him to some of those Maryland bred stakes that are all sitting out there for horses, you know, and then at Laurel, and then even some of the open stakes that are in Maryland. You know, they're only, you know, they're $100,000 races, but they're there, and we've seen horses go do that. He's gonna hook Cordmaker and some other horses eventually, but you know, a pretty fair horse, and if he'd have stayed in Maryland, I think that's probably where he would have been. You know, he'd have been at that level, but obviously he got, you know, he was sold and was aiming for bigger and better things and just sort of never circled all the way back around, which again was, to me, the power of that was how, what that meant to Jay Williamson watching the horse come back to Maryland and win, you know.
And, that's great.
You know, and I have, as the at Mid-Atlantic Thoroughbred, you can get into sort of the magazine archives and the old Maryland horses and those things, which go back to the 30s, but you can search almost any term through their archives, and I always look for something else, but anyway, you can find just any old editions, and it's just, there's treasures in there. Well, there are letters to the editor written by a very young John E. Williamson III, Jay, while he was stationed in various places overseas during Vietnam, and appreciating reading the Maryland horse and like encouraging the locals and things like that, and how he was showing the magazine around the barracks, and you know, like, and here he is breeding a Maryland Million Classic winner, you know. So that's the magic of horse racing to me, is just stories like that.
Yep.
That you come across.
Yep. Well, the more formful, some of the other formful results, 6-5 on Coconut Cake for Tim Keefe. And, of course, Tim, yet another horseman. I've mentioned almost the entire group of horsemen that have been named to the HISA advisory board today. Tim Keefe for Jim Chambers and NRS Stables. This was a McGinnis bandbox. A bandbox, just amazing. Coconut Cake, the 5-year-old. He had some nice prices underneath. Fida Esprit, at Malibu Beauty, they did figure, and they run 1-2. This for Jerry Robb and partners. Chickiness figured in that Lassie, and I was very pleased here. I talked about Skyler's sister being the right price underneath, and Basarati, who ran very well for Joe Politi, and Brittany Russell. What else? For the Love of Bourbon was 1-2 and won well. We did get Karen's Notion in underneath. That was good. So that was Michael Pino and Smart Angle. The Hidden Acres, Bourbon Courage, gelding. And yeah, those are the other results.
It was a great day to me. I mean, and again, just really spread out. And I mean, Coconut Cake was a favorite, but she had lost 14 races in a row, and came through, which I love. Again, horses like that try every time. She wasn't getting rewarded, and to hear Tim talk about her afterwards is, he said that's the way she is. She's going to keep trying no matter what, and she got rewarded there on Saturday. And then the other, there was an owner trainer, Sam Davis, one with Wicked Prankster.
Yes.
And that was the Country Life. Was the celebration of the day. The winner's circle got so big they had to take everybody out on the track to take the photo. So
I saw that. What was that? What was that about?
So Sam is a, and again, I don't think I've ever run across Sam, but he's. I was talking to George Ann Hale a little bit and then did interview him. But he's, he's got six or so horses of his own and still rides them in the morning. And he claimed that horse in its first start, and basically because of he had paid attention to all the sort of buzz about Mosler as a stallion, and thought the horse might be worth that, and he's won four races for him, and he was trying to get to the Maryland Million turf with the horse, and ran him as a prep. Because he figured it was going to be a little more productive than at work a week earlier, and he won.
Right,
and then he comes back and wins again. And
we'll get him on.
The friends and family that were in the winner's circle just overwhelmed everything. But that was again half the fun of it.
Oh, that is great. Because I overlooked that horse, and that cost me the pick five. We should also mention. There was also Trombetta and Larry Johnson, Sky's Not Falling, winning the sprint, the turf sprint. And you can't go – this is strictly anecdotal. I may be 100% wrong, but it sure feels like our friend Linda Albert wins one of those starter handicap undercard races every year. Am I right or am I right?
Yeah, it sure seems like it. You're right. And I think that was, any of that. I mean, again, I think that's the depth of that day of racing. It goes in all directions, and big-time trainers win, and smaller-time people win, and owner-breeders, and owner-trainer, exercise rider. We had a little bit of everything, which is, I don't know. You couldn't necessarily say that's going to happen walking in the place, but you can almost count on it.
Well, Linda, we go back to one of our horses from many years ago, and Linda handled one for us that won at Delaware, and just always happy to root for Linda Albert. She's one of those under the radar people, that just operates quietly. But you give her a good horse. Give her a mediocre horse, and she'll produce.
Yeah, and that was fun too. The Audrey Murray owns that horse, and they won the last race of the day, and they also stand Blofeld, so it was kind of a big
nice.
Lid on a special day for them too.
Special day again for brother Sean as well, who produces another winner on Saturday, this at Great Meadow. And I'll probably recap some of that later this week, but it looked like Sean had a fun day.
Yeah, he's going to have some decisions to make with non-winners or two hurdle horses next year, because I think he's got three or four now. So
How about that?
With Bad Horse the other day, POTUS was pretty good. I mean, that was, you know, pretty impressive. I think you see, and it's hard to, it'll be hard to remember next summer, but I think you'll come to a conclusion that some horses in these hurdle races, the maiden hurdle races that they have at Colonial Downs, it just might not be their game. You know, it's a great thing for steeplechasing to have those races through the summer, but I think you'll just see some horses where they get outrun at Colonial in a jump race, but then when they come to a place like Great Meadow or Far Hills or Shawan Downs or these places that are more jumping, you know, less pace, then it just suits them a little better than it would at Colonial, where a horse like that runs. You know, they might come off a bad race at Colonial, but that doesn't necessarily mean they won't run much better, you know, when they get to some of these other race meets in the fall.
Joe Clancy, what a great weekend, Maryland Million, and the action at Great Meadow, the Zeke Ferguson, and the International Gold Cup, and then of course the fightins. It's always the fightins, and it's going to be a fun, fun series. Thank you, buddy.
Yeah, okay. We got to wait. I mean, that's the waiting is going to be the hard part.
Yeah.
But it is going to be fun to see. And again, it doesn't happen very often.
Joe Clancy, everybody. Joe Clancy, 65, which means that Joe did not, unlike Johnny D, who had to watch the Philly collapse in 64, Joe is not old enough to have been there to watch Gene Mauch and those Phillies go, they were up by 14 games, I think, with 20 to play. One of the great collapses in baseball history. Mike Welch is standing by, and Mike, they're keeping you busy already. Big weekend of works toward the Breeders' Cup. Good morning.
Good morning.
Mike, I had Steve Asmussen earlier, and you know, we were talking about his two stake winners from Saturday at Keeneland, but he made news on Sunday too with Epicenter and the rest of the very strong hand from the Asmussen barn.
Yeah, I know. He, like I said in the video I did and wrote too, that he had to be smiling from ear to ear, in the dark with the first four, and then of course afterwards when Epicenter did his thing too. He looked, you know, terrific as usual. I mean, he's a good workhorse, and he obviously seems to be maintaining that good form the way he breezed yesterday.
Mike, on that topic, because you watched him get ready, and it's always valuable perspective. You, in fact, when it comes to simplification, you mentioned that it doesn't look like he's on that same sharp edge that he was going back to Derby preparedness. But any difference in Epicenter now than in August?
Well, to be honest with you, Epicenter, you know, trained a lot over at Oklahoma.
That's true.
So
that's true.
I didn't see all that much of him during the summer there at Saratoga. That was more my other guys watching him. But I mean, the works I did see of him, it looks, you know, similar to me. But I don't have the same perspective on him as I might have on some of the others.
Fair enough. Kind of, you know, fill out the rest of this group. I specifically brought up Echo Zulu, who has been, you know, sort of out of sight, fits in kind of an incomplete season, but it sure feels like she's coming up the way you'd want to that sprint.
Yeah, you know, most of the Asmussen horses, again, were over at Oklahoma, so I did not see them on a regular basis during the summer. So I don't have anything to compare with, but just, you know, in and of itself, Echo Zulu's work was just terrific yesterday. I mean, it was hard to imagine she was going that fast. The track is fast, but it's not, you know, over the top fast here at Keeneland in the morning. And she did it as easy as could be, and just continued showing that energy on the gallop out. I think I mentioned she looked like she's a live player in there. It's a wide open race, especially if Kamari goes to the sprint, makes it even more so. And yeah, she was great. And I also mentioned her workmate, Marcelles, who's only run three times. She finished second in an A other than last time. She looks like she's getting better with every start. And she kind of matched rides with her most of the way until the latter stages of the gallop out, and Echo Zulu pulled away. But that was terrific. It was a great way to start the morning. It was the first of, you know, five excellent works on a pretty high level, trying to separate them grade-wise. There's not much separating them. They're all very good.
Mike, let me ask about Clairière and Society as well, because it does feel like the media or the Twitter regurgitation machine wants everybody to narrow their focus between Malifaux and Nest, and Clairière and Society and, well, search results. We'll get to search results in a minute when we talk about the Chad contingent. But it feels like Society of the three-year-old fillies is being not overlooked, but, she is going to face elders. And Clairière, Clairière is just as consistent as you possibly want a horse to be coming into this race.
Yeah, their works are a little bit different. Obviously, Society is a speed horse, and she showed that speed early in her work and sustained great momentum, though, even though she went real quick early. She sustained real good momentum on the gallop out. Clairière, a little slower earlier, finished up better. Was under a teeny bit of pressure from Joelle at the end. Pulled away from a workmate that was totally overmatched. You couldn't make any judgment on that, but she also galloped out terrific. I mean, she went out a full 7/8 and 27 and change under Joelle. Again, two different styles, and they'll have two different styles when they run. It's a terrific race, and I haven't sat down to handicap it yet. I'm not sure Malifaux and Nest are that far separated from the rest of them. I think it's going to be a terrific race, and if you want to take a stand against the two Pletchers, you might get some value on some very good racehorses here, very good fillies.
Shift into the Chad contingent, and 10, 11, maybe 12 are going to be pre-entered today, and search results is going to be a price. How is she not? She can't be better than fourth choice, right?
I would say, she's a good workhorse, and it was kind of an odd work because she was supposed to go by herself, and it was so busy after the break here on Saturday, just with the general population, the Breeders' Cup horses mixing in there, and that's what happens sometimes when you want a fresh track, you want to go after the break, you catch others wanting to do the same thing, and she wound up hooking in with a Brad Cox horse. I'm not even sure who it was. It was not a Breeders' Cup horse, obviously, and for whatever reason, after they hooked in, they kind of slowed down, took it easy early. And then she finished up well. She was about a length ahead at the wire, but she was just cruising. Brad's horse was under some pressure. Then her gallop out was by far the best part of the work. She just continued on through a couple of 13/8 in going around that sweeping clubhouse turn there. So I loved it. I write every once in a while better than the final time suggests, and this was one of those.
Jack Christopher, let's talk about the two sprint contenders, the three-year-old Jack Christopher, the two-year-old Blazing Sevens.
I got to give Blazing Sevens props. He held right in there with him for a young horse. He gets extra credit for that. In fact, I thought on the gallop out, Jack Christopher's rider had to, get in, ask him a little bit, show him the whip and everything just to kind of keep pace. Now, he's wider, he's outside going into that turn, so it's a little advantage for the inside horse there, but I don't like what I saw out of Blazing Sevens. And Jack Christopher, he's a terrific workhorse. He always has been. Maybe does have his issues to deal with, and it's hard to say that I thought his work, the last works I saw of him in New York, were probably a little bit flashier than this. So we'll see. I mean, it's going to be interesting. The sprint. Everybody's conceding to Jackie's Warrior, but then last year he was 7-5, and look what happened there too. So I think it's a fairly wide open bunch. Also,
The rest of course the group for Chad, lots of turf horses, but there is Raging Sea in the juvenile fillies. And also domestic spending on the return. I think there may be a hint of value when the odds start flashing on domestic spending.
Yeah, I thought she worked good. I don't know if she was confirmed for the race until she worked
Raging Saint
on Saturday. And I think she might have earned her way in with her work. She finished up really well, was cruising on even turn with Virginia Joy. And maybe that's turned Chad in favor of putting her in. I thought the best team and the best turf works of the morning were Regier and Regal Glory, though. They really finished and galloped out terrific around that turn. You know, they're around the wide dogs, so the times are a little skewed. 49 and 2 might be a little misleading for a half mile, but they went 27 and changed the opening, or around 27 the opening quarter. It's a little hard to get an accurate time on that quarter pole there, the way it's set at the top of the stretch with the dogs so far out. But just visually, they were both really good.
Well, and speaking of the mile, where Regal Glory is going to go, domestic spending as well. Word came this morning, I see, that Rock of Gibraltar passed at the age of 23.
Yeah, I saw a glimpse of that on Twitter this morning.
Yeah.
That's sad.
Mike, the Pletcher Group a day earlier, any other particularly notable performances? You talked about Life is Good on Friday. I know that's already, you know, well back in your notebook, but anything you want to add about earlier in the weekend?
Yeah, I mean, Malafat and Ness were both very good. I thought Malafat was a little better. They both are good workhorses, and they look every bit, you know, like they're coming into the race on top of their games, which, you know, is one of the reasons they are going to be vying for favoritism, probably. Life is Good, you know, on the watch and just in general. It was, you know, it was an excellent work. I mean, any trainer would love to have a horse work like that, but just to me, visually, and it wasn't the Life is Good, just in my perception anyway, that I saw at Saratoga, just not dragging the rider around there on the gallop out, where, you know, on Saratoga, he would seem like he'd gallop out forever. And the other day, it was good. I mean, he went a mile and 140 and a fifth or something like that, which is excellent. But just, you know, perceptually, it just didn't seem quite as good to me as I saw him back at Saratoga.
Oh, fair enough. You know, by the way, I just got a request. Did Goodnight Olive work?
She did, and she was in that whole mess after the break, and I did not see her. I did not see her. I'm not even sure if she made the tab, because I'm not sure that I don't know whether the clock is quarter or not either, but I just did not see her. Just, and one of the problems is here right now is the Breeders' Cup horses don't have their towels. And when you have 40 horses working at the same
wow.
time and they're mixed in the bunch, even if it was a Chad Brown towel, you know, from a distance where we are, it looks like another white towel amongst all the other white towels. And sometimes it's just hard to pick out. And especially if you're, you know, they're going at the same time as several of the others that you want to see are too. So that was unfortunate, and hopefully I'll get to see her this weekend.
I just looked her up. They did get her down for a minute and two fifths on
okay.
Saturday.
All righty. They did get her. That's good.
Ninth of 62 working. All right. Well, this always, you know, the 2 weeks, 2 weeks out is invariably most often bigger than the work a week out.
Yeah, and a lot of occasions, yes, it is. It is. And tomorrow we're going to have Rich Strike work. We're also going to have Jackie's Warriors work. He, I thought, was going to work today. I saw him out there galloping very early this morning, so they postponed the work till tomorrow. And Flightline, who did jog here this morning, I saw him for about 10 seconds jogging past the wire, and then he went right back around to the barn. He's supposed to gallop tomorrow, so and all that is going to be early. Rich Strike, Flightline, and Jackie's Warrior all go out as soon as the track opens at 5:30. So anybody out there that's around the local area and want to see those three, come out at 5:30, and by 5:45, you could probably get back in the car, go home, and go back to bed.
Mike will not get back in the car and go back to bed. He will stay there all morning. Mike, thanks a lot.
Okay, Steve.
Mike Welch, everybody, and there it is. Let's immediately turn out to California. Speaking of Flightline, Gary Young will give us a glance and his thoughts about Flightline's last serious prep before he headed to Keeneland. Gary, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Gary, real quick on the horses, a quick flight line thought, and then give us your Taba update before we talk about Howie Zucker.
Flight line was, if you don't like that, you don't like carrot cake. That's about all you can say about his work. I mean, it was terrific. You know, it's really, it's kind of strange. I mean, you know, I think Taba was by his standards, he worked terrific this morning. He was 35-3, 58-3, down to the bottom, galloped out in 11-2. And by his standards, it was unbelievable. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think he's going to run the best race of his life, whether it's going to be good enough or not. We're going to find out. Any other year, I'd feel a lot, you know, I'd feel you're always going to be running against really nice horses in the Breeders' Cup Classic, but this horse seems to be a different kind of animal. He does. He does.
Amazing. Well, let me, we've only got about 3-4 minutes, and I want you to spend that appreciating Howie Zucker. Your name came up with Hammer on Friday, and really everybody widely saddened by Howie not making it out of the open heart surgery.
You know, obviously the years that I was buying horses for the Gresser family and Howie was training them, we spent a lot of time together. Crafty CT was probably he made it to, you know, he almost won the Breeders' Cup Sprint at Arlington that year, which would have been a really big thing for us and for me growing up there. That was one of the ones that I knew he was going to run good, and he just didn't win. But Howie never had a bad word to say about anybody. He's a fun guy to hang out with. Wasn't a bad basketball player, and you know, he lived okay, fancy cars and stuff like that. That wasn't what Howie aspired to do. He just wanted to hang out with his horses and hang out with his friends, and I think that should definitely be appreciated, and that should be part of how we remember him. Would be the, you know, he just he wanted to win. He was competitive and everything, but he didn't you know, he always tried to maintain a somewhat even keel, and I think the thing that would maybe, you know, Howie had, you know, his foreman, his main groom Steve, and his assistant trainer and everything. Those people worked for him for like years. That wasn't an employer type of relationship. It was almost like a family down there. They were, you know, and you know, he between Madame Pietra and Crafty and
yep.
Queen of the Cathley and everything, he had quite a few nice horses for aggressors and for other people, and you know, just he was walking a little slowly lately, stuff like that. I mean, you never really knew that this was going to come on so fast and take him out, but unfortunately it did, and you know, it's just something that we all have to face our immortality. Sometime, and you know, Howie was. A lot of people around here were very, very, you know, because it came on so suddenly. A lot of people around here were between the shock and the sorrow. A lot of people definitely felt it when Howie died. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. No, the widespread outpouring, and a guy that in some ways a little kind of similar to Barry Abrams, but with Barry, you know, we had this long, drawn-out illness. This sort of just you know, this sort of takes you out at the knees, and you can tell the huge outpouring. In fact, I'm going to send out a absolutely beautiful tribute that was written at Thoroughbred Racing Commentary. Rachel Pagonis wrote a beautiful piece, and I'll link that up for everybody. Gary Young, Bloodstock, everybody, when are we going to see you at Keeneland?
Probably be there Tuesday and then be out there Wednesday morning.
Excellent.
You know,
excellent.
It looks like the weather, it's temperature-wise, it looks okay. Someone said to me that as of now, there's a little rain predicted on Breeders' Cup Day, but that's
what they said. It's too far out. Way too far out.
Yeah, exactly.
We're not going to worry about it.
Exactly.
We're not going to worry about it. Gary Young, everybody. Gary, thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Have a good day.
Gary Young, everybody. Mike Welch, Joe Clancy, Pat Morrell, Rich Migliori, Steve Asmussen. That's our show. Hope you enjoyed. Back with you tomorrow, 9 a.m. We're going to have a visit from a legendary quarter horse and thoroughbred trainer. Jim Helzer is going to join us tomorrow. I'm looking forward to that. And Andy Serling and much more. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you then.
The latest racing news. It's At The Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio. Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The